Welcome back, everybody, to part two of our Bogmas special here. We have the mighty Jack Young with us, but before we get started, I want to make sure everybody likes, subscribe, share, click the little alert button so you get alert every time we go live. Let me tell you guys something. Before we get started, I wanted to give you guys a little shout out here. You know, a lot of people reach out to me and they say they really love this community because that's what this is. This is a community. It's not like we're up here on a pedestal, delving out content and stuff like that. We are a community, we are a family, and we are a tribe, and we all work together. So I want to ask you guys, if you guys like our content, you like what we do here on the Bog and Nerona Society, guys that are all over the place doing great content, help us out, give us a share, drop us into your Telegram groups, drop us into your Discord groups, drop us into your Facebook groups, your chats, you know, Instagram, Twitter, wherever you're at. Help us out, help us get the message out, and help the gods become the cultural standard that they once were so we can bring about a new golden age. Also, go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Promo code Dave to get 10% off. Yule's coming up, man. Yule's coming up. Make sure you get something for your mom, for your wife, for yourself. Our ancestors gifted us with so many wonderful, beautiful features. We should let them shine for all the world to see. Go to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Promo code Dave to get 10% off. So let's get started here. Today, we have the mighty Jack Young with us, fitness expert, guru, really good guy, has a lot of really great motivational stuff, and he's here with us to talk about the metaphysics of strength. How are we doing this evening, Mr. Jack?
Doing good, yeah. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate
absolutely. Absolutely. Now, this is a very, very British Bogmas. We got the Jive on part one. We got Jack Young here on part two. It's really, really cool stuff hearing from our brothers across the pond there. So, yeah, let's get right into it. You are into fitness and training and all of this stuff. To somebody like me, that's I do a little bit here and there. I kind of go through spurts, and I kind of have trouble sticking to it. And a lot of us do because we in the wolf age, we have such busy lives. And it kind of unless you grow up in a culture of fitness and health, it's it's kind of hard to get that into. What is your advice to people, and what is the importance of having a lifestyle like this?
Yeah, I would say, it is difficult to get into it. Just fit it in wherever you can. And if you're new to everything, then you don't need to make any big commitments. Just start off at home. Very basic stuff. Push-ups, really basic body weight movements if you're new. It's very important because fitness not only, of course you get healthier and it gives you a great physique, but it also structures the whole part of your life. Every single hour of every day is then structured because of fitness, because you have to take care of what you eat and how you sleep and where you go, what cardio you're doing, so many things come into play. So it's not just an hour in the gym, it's your whole life, and it gives a great order towards your life.
Yeah, that's an incredible point. I actually want to get back into that in a minute, but I want to ask, you mentioned about basic movements and stuff like that. For somebody that's maybe they don't have a gym membership quite yet or something like that, what is like a routine that they can get started with, a number of sets or whatever, at home? Is calisthenics enough to get you started?
Right, yeah, definitely. That's how I started. And you can do that probably more often than the gym because you're not going to get as sore probably after the workout. And basic things, push-ups, if you have a pull-up bar, doing pull-ups, all types of ab movements, maybe one-legged squats. They're a bit difficult, but you just work up to that. And you can really get creative with push-ups. Putting your feet on an incline, so doing handstand push-ups, making them more difficult, wide grip, close grip, whatever you want, jumping push-ups. There's so many different exercises you can do with mostly your upper body if you're just using body weight at home, and then a couple with lower body. Yeah.
Now, as we talk about, for instance, the upper body and cardio and whatnot you mentioned, do you have a preference for, say, weightlifting or cardio, or do you think it's better if we do a mixture of both?
Right. Yeah, I would say, I grew up doing long distance running, but then I quickly started into bodybuilding, heavy weightlifting. Ultimately, I think it's best of both worlds. If we're talking about function, you want to be fit. You want to be able to, run long distances, if you need to defend yourself, fight for a long time, yeah. and you also want to be strong and be able to lift things, carry things, protect yourself. So both are very important, I think.
So we need to focus more on like practical strength, not just the sort of sportsman kind of tournament level kind of thing. Anything that would make a person strong practically to fight, defend yourself, to work in reality.
Yeah, I mean, it does depend on your goal. If you want to enter a competition, then you'd need to train for whatever competition that would be. But just for general everyday stuff, I mean, functional fitness and basic lifts like bench press, deadlifts, squats, overhead press, that's going to work all the main muscles and just make you stronger and leaner and just more functional throughout the day.
Yeah. So you mentioned functional. You mentioned something about a goal. Let me tell you, for my show prep for this episode was I watched a bunch of Arnold Schwarzenegger videos. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's funny. You know, I'm not going to lie. I still love Arnold. I love, you know, his movies, everything. Conan, Terminator. I love the guy's movies. But he was,
course, yeah.
before he did that stuff, he was regarded as like the king of bodybuilding and the king of weightlifting and stuff like that. And a lot of his books are still, you know, passed around as like source material for working out. And in his videos, every single video that he did when he was talking about getting into working out, he said, you have to set a goal. He said, that is the number one thing. He's like, without a goal, you're just kind of floating around. And in his words, it was like, it doesn't matter if you're trying to be 7-time Mr. Universe or if you're just trying to impress girls. He's like, but you have to have a goal. What do you think about Schwarzenegger's point there?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And in the short term, that's very accurate. You need a goal to get you started in the short term. But ultimately, that won't last for the rest of your life. You're not always going to want to impress girls because at some point you're going to be old and wrinkly and, you know, you won't really care as much. So once you kind of kickstart yourself with a short-term goal, then I would say put it onto something higher. For example, you want to stay, you know, at a stable weight so that you can live long enough to see your children. Like, that's a fair goal for a middle-aged person, however. So I'd say, yeah, it's a great advice for that starting period where you're not really into it, you're not motivated, and then from there progress.
Now, would you say that a person should have a more metaphysical goal in mind for perhaps fitness and strength for the sake of itself as a means of self-improvement rather than a sort of material goal like picking up chicks or, being really good in the boxing ring or something like that?
Yes. I mean, if you're a professional sportsman, then you'll probably forever be staying within that short-term, more material goal. But for the average person, yeah, I think you do need to put it onto something higher. And I think every man should be strong and fit and, you know, able to do basic things. I mean, you need to be able to defend yourself if that comes to it. And you need to be able to run far enough and lift heavy enough. But these are really basic things that I think everybody should attain for. And I mean, also, ultimately, if we talk about the basic, like, trifecta of the physical, mental, and spiritual, I think you can't be fully complete without mastering all three.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, in a lot of the stuff that I, in my Kenslow, which I call the primordial path, we talk about, mastering of self, discipline of the body, and that's like the building block. That's the foundation. You can't even start talking about the mind and the spirit until you have your body mastered. And that for what I've focused on throughout the years is mainly, you know, getting away from degeneracy like pornography. And I know we could actually touch on that. I think we should touch on that because I know that's a strong talking point for you. Diet. Staying away from things that are bad for you. Just like all of these things, you know, filling your brain with too much entertainment. And as you know, anybody's read Plato knows that he wanted to like censor entertainment and art because he thought that it appealed to people's emotional side of them too much, and it conditioned them to be emotional illogical creatures. And without logic and without philosophy and without reason and stuff, we can't become spiritual beings. You know, you have to have that foundation of that foundational reasoning philosophies before you can even branch out into the greater metaphysical things. But going back to the point, it was like that's the beginning. Now, you mentioned something just a couple minutes ago that I want to touch on, and this is another aspect of the primordial path as well as just spirituality in general. You know, one of our favorite people, and we're going to get him on the show one of these days, Sridharma Acharya, who's like a Hindu guy or Sanatana Dharma guy. He talks a lot about having rigidity and having a schedule with your spiritual lifestyle, having a routine. And you just mentioned that working out applies that to your life, to your lifestyle. That is something that's also important with spirituality. I teach this all the time. You got to have your meditations. You have to have a routine of prayer, a routine. It's just a routine of what we call trunathar, which is like devotion, or as the Hindus would call bhakti. You know, you got to have a routine of devotion with your spirituality. You know, and you just mentioned that. So how does working out and getting into the gym, you mentioned that it kind of applies, it creates like a structure in everything you do. How does that happen, and how does that permeate throughout the rest of your lifestyle, including spirituality?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the kind of mental strength and spiritual strength, whilst you're living, I mean, they're all inside the physical body. So you really do need to improve the physical body, I think, if you want to improve the other two. Master them. It's like if a genius scholar was going on his way to do a speech and then his car broke down. It's like he's not going to get very far if the kind of the physical mover is dying. And fitness itself is great because it's not just, like I said, it's not just the hour. It adds everything to your life because you have to build so much discipline. I mean, on a very basic level, this is, you know, every fitness guy will say this about discipline of diet and being careful with what you eat and how much sleep you get, and you know, you can't stay up too late because you need to get full 8 hours so you can build muscle. Just so many I mean, even how much you go to the toilet can factor into fitness. So really every second is therefore structured. And with that kind of structure, you can very easily apply mental and spiritual training within that structure, I think. And that's how I've done it.
So pooping too much is no good. That'll mess up.
I mean, for some guys, yeah, I mean, it can. It's a kind of a meme about, you know, they want to get back the calories after they've pooped them out.
that's pretty. I've actually never heard that before. That's pretty.
I've amazing. Never heard that either. But going back to what you said about thing. Yeah, going back to what you said about nutrition here. What kind of diet would you recommend for the average person? Are you, you know, like a meatitarian, a keto kind of guy, or what kind of thing do you recommend?
Basic structure is always try and keep 30 to 40 grams of protein per meal. So whether that comes from eggs, meat, fish, soy, whatever it would be. And then with that, depending on your current body weight, your current level of fitness, then you can factor in things like carbs and fats. And fats you also want to keep moderately high because, I mean, fats don't equal gaining fat. They're all about hormone balance, so they're very important too.
That's great. You know, we had Folkish Farmer on here, and even we did a show with Dr. G. And both of those guys talked about we need more fish in our diet. We do. Our ancestors ate so much fish. And speaking of Folkish Farmer, at halftime we have he's going to do a recipe on how to make old world bread. So everybody can look forward to that. It's going to be a really good episode. So we can get away from the bleached flour and like all the really bad carbs that we intake. And let me tell you something, man. Being, you know, part Italian, we eat pasta, and it's something that we have trouble getting rid of because it's like, you know, you love what your cultural food is, you know. So it's like, you know, spaghetti with Sunday gravy and all that stuff. It's something that I eat all the time, and it's something that it's really hard to get rid of. But you know, something like this, getting these old world grains back into our diet and getting rid of kind of these modern processed flours and grains and stuff is something that we should really look into and something that we really need to start focusing on. Is that what is your suggestion for carbs and stuff? Like if you could break it down to just like a diet, say like maybe like eat chicken this day, eat fish this day, or whatever. What would you suggest as something just to get started with diet?
I mean, this is basic advice. I mean, every individual is different, so you have to apply things within the basic advice foundation. Steak, fish, chicken—they're all great sources of protein. And like I said, it depends on what body fat you're starting with. If you're pretty high body fat level, and then you're trying to get into fitness, then you would want to keep carbohydrates relatively low, and factor in perhaps more greens, even though vegetables are carbs. I mean, factor in more greens and lean proteins. And then if you're starting like me, because I started very underweight, then I would say that's when you can really be free with it and just eat as much as you like. And I mean, bread's got a lot of protein in it too, so you can get crazy with that. Just structure it carefully. And if you're starting overweight, then I'd say maybe have one meal a day where you have a normal amount of carbs, and then the rest of the meals try and keep carbs low or non-existent.
And what's your opinion on keto? I know a lot of people are on this keto craze and stuff like that, and I have a friend, not Dr. G, but I have another friend that's the physician, and he hates keto. He thinks falsely putting your body into ketosis is terrible for you. What's your opinion on that?
I mean, a lot of these diets are just to look good on Instagram. So I don't 100% recommend or like all of them. I mean, keto, it works quickly if you're coming from an overweight position. But it's still not necessarily good, because people will just say they're on keto and eat just stacks of bacon and butter because there's no carbs. So I wouldn't 100% recommend all of it. But I mean, if you're really overweight, then I guess keto works.
Yeah.
But it's not sustainable forever, I don't think.
Yeah, that's his point is, when you want to get into health, you want to look at something that's long-term lifestyle, not just like he calls them Hollywood diets, like where you just kind of like you want to look good quick for a picture or like a recording or whatever. It's not something that you want to work into your lifestyle. He actually said that if you do keto over a long period of time, it's really bad for you. It's bad for your teeth. Your hair will start falling out. And like you're going to start looking like a leper or something. I don't know. But apparently it's not good for you. But another misconception that I've heard is the whole thing about dairy. A lot of people say it's time to get rid of dairy, which I refuse to do. I'll never ever get rid of dairy. So what's your opinion about dairy?
It's natural. I mean, I wouldn't want to get rid of it either. You know, I'd say limit the higher calories that comes with dairy. If again you're overweight, then I'd say limit that. But if you're not, then just enjoy too. I mean, if you can digest it properly. Drink loads of milk. Milk's good for you.
Yeah,
it's great for you.
Exactly.
Why not?
Right. It's interesting how much calories are actually in a glass of milk. I think it's something like close to 400 or something of that sort.
Yeah. So it's great if you're trying to build muscle. That's dairy's perfect for that.
Right. That's the Go Mad meme was, if you want to get big, drink a gallon of milk.
Yeah, a gallon of milk a day. I mean, it's I wouldn't say a gallon, but milk's still great. Same with, you know, whey protein, all these types of things.
Yeah. I think a lot of the dairy stuff is based on the globalist way of thought, because it's like, well, most of the world is lactose intolerant. Well, let me tell you, our folk, those of us that come from you know, Europe, we have a gene that is called LP allele. It is an allele that LP stands for lactase persistence. And what that means is, we are the only people in the world that continue to produce lactase in our stomach as we go into adulthood. And what lactase is it's an enzyme that breaks down milk into adulthood. It's something that our ancestors evolved to have. I mean, we're not lactose intolerant. I mean, so obviously some people are born with that, but there's nothing wrong with dairy for our people. And when you say, you know, well, most of the world is lactose intolerant. Yeah, well, also, you know, most of the world eats different things. You know what I mean? Like, so it's, we've evolved to have milk. Okay, so before we get too far into talking about diet and stuff, I kind of wanted to get back to what is maybe, to couple with the diet, what is maybe just like a very easy kind of way to go about with working out? Would you say like do, I don't know, 10 pull-ups a day, 10 sit-ups a day, or 10 or 20 or whatever? What is something that somebody can just start doing right now?
Well, I mean, if you take it in sets, you could realistically do like 50 or 100 push-ups a day, and then because you're just doing like 10 sets of 10 reps, so you can have rest between each 10 reps, and then you'd get that done. So yeah, if you're a complete beginner, then I'd say yeah, start with, you know, 50 push-ups a day, maybe 30 pull-ups a day, obviously taking in sets. I'm not expecting you to do it all at once, and then like 50 sit-ups, 100 squats. I mean, if you're doing this with no weight, then you should recover fairly quickly, and it should be quite easy, and you'll get used to it very quickly. So that's when you'd want to make it a little bit more difficult.
So you're saying throughout the day, so you could do, like, just say you do 10 push-ups, then a couple hours later do 10 more push-ups, and then a couple hours later do 10 more?
I mean, in theory, you could do that, but I would suggest doing it all, you know, within 1 hour. Because, I mean, that's when you're in the mindset. That's when you're in the zone. You want to play music, take your shirt off. That's how it's done.
Now, would you say that it's beneficial to do low numbers of reps or a high number of reps with a low number of push-ups, say 10 groups of 10? Or would you say, you know, like 5 groups of 20 or something of that sort? Is it better to do a higher amount?
It depends how many you can do at one time. If you're struggling to reach like 5 push-ups, like in one go, then you would need to take it in more sets and less reps. But again, it's just depends on your current strength and fitness level.
Right. So it's just circumstantial for each person.
Yeah. It's very individual, which is the thing with fitness, because everyone's bodies are different, ligaments, things attach differently. We're all different in terms of like physicality.
Awesome. Very, very cool. That's incredible advice. Because I know, man, there's, and we're going to get into the metaphysics right now. One thing that you talk about, and you know, we've talked about in private conversations, in our chats and stuff, is how important this is to our you know, our movement, our people, our faith, and all this stuff. And one of the first things that you said to me when we first started talking, Mr. Jack reached out to me actually on Instagram. We started talking and stuff like that. As he says, I want to make our guys strong for what's coming. You know what I mean? I want to make them be able to defend themselves, and I want them to be powerful and stuff like that. Now, this is the kind of guy I got to talk to. So you mentioned how this is so important. Now, outside of just individual health and, you know, looks and stuff like that, what are the metaphysics of strength? What does that mean?
Well, these are the masculine ideals that I think every man should try to uphold. I mean, these are like timeless stories and fables and myths of ancient strong heroes that fought monsters. I mean, this is in all forms of fantasy pretty much. So I think this is really, it's the complete package with what you should strive for physically. And I don't think you can be fully complete as a man unless you master yourself physically. I mean, look at these ancient heroes. If you look at all of the kind of old stories, there's always kind of one sort of supernal theme that originates from something else and then flows through them. I mean, all the characters change and the people change, but there's always like the strong leader, this physical force that is relentless and defeats all evil. That is something that is constant. And I think that's kind of like a channel that we should all strive to kind of get on, if you kind of get what I'm saying.
Absolutely. So you view it not so much as just like being healthy and being strong and looking good. You view it as very much a heroic ideal, like an ideal that men should reach for, and that it's part of being a man, and it's essential in establishing order in this world. You know, I know that you're a guy that you're very big on you're not one of these like amoralist. It's like, let's balance order with chaos and like all that weird stuff. You're very much, let us impose order and goodness and light upon this world, and let's do it with strength.
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's also like, what is the, like the Jordan Peterson thing of, if you don't have power, if you've never had power and strength, then you don't know if you're a good man. Because once you have that, then you can determine what you would do with it. You know, some people can get drunk with power. And that on a very basic level, I mean, you look at guys who kind of like roided out, get in bar fights. That's what they're doing. They have so much power physically, and they're just randomly imposing it because they have nothing else to hold it to. So I think, yeah, once you attain that power, you should strive, just keep striving for this kind of like ultimate ideal and try and pull as many people into this path as possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I would note that that's also a very classical idea, the notion that a man's strength and his fitness and his own strength of character is innately tied together. I mean, even the word virtue derives from the term vir, which is manliness. To have virtue is literally to have the qualities of manliness.
Would that be etymologically tied to virility?
Yes, it is. Virile, to be virility, is to also be, to be able to perform as a man.
Wow, that's very cool. And when you get into the study of words, you like, there's a lot of stuff that gets revealed. It's very, very cool. So you're talking about this heroic ideal. We have a couple minutes till we go over and check out Folkish Farmer. But you talk about this heroic ideal. What are the kind of like the figures or maybe the heroes of myth or whatever that you really look to?
I have to say Beowulf. I mean, I've mentioned that quite a lot. That is the ultimate thing that pushed me. I mean, before I started reading into the actual story of it, I watched the animated movie, which I know isn't accurate to the original story, but it did have one amazing scene where he gets naked and fights the giant demon Grendel. And that, just from a very young age, from seeing that, you know, that's exactly what I wanted to be. That, I think, speaks to all young men and boys, is that just ultimate force of power. And also with that specific story, the idea of him being naked is kind of like he's showing his vulnerability, but he's kind of enforcing it with power. Like, he has no insecurities, no weaknesses. He is just pure strength.
Right. It's not a matter of a clever tool usage. He's stripping himself down to his basic foundations and then overcoming the enemy.
Yeah, which is a complete raw power, and I think originates from something beyond human.
That's excellent. So we're going to go over and we're going to check out Folkish Farmer, and we will continue this conversation. Let's check it out. Let's see what he's got. He's going to make us some old world bread with einkorn flour. I'm really excited for this. Let's check him out.
Welcome to the kitchen of the Folkish Farmer. Today we're going to make some bread. Now, I don't typically eat a lot of bread, but on a cold winter day, you know, you just really want some bread. And this is a little bit of a healthier bread. I'm going to use something called einkorn. And einkorn is an ancient grain. It's a very old wheat. It's about 12,000 years old as far as cultivation that we know of. So you can think that our ancestors probably had something very similar to this. And it's a lot different than our modern bleached out wheat that you get in the grocery store. It is a little bit more expensive, but the way I see it is I don't eat a lot of breads, I don't eat a lot of pastries and things like that. So, you know, when I do like a higher quality, and this is certainly one of them. What I have here is 1 cup of water, and this water is not boiling, but it's not cold. It's about 100 degrees. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to add just a small little drizzle of honey into this. Now, you could use sugar or something. What you're wanting to do is activate the yeast. So I'm just going to pour a little bit of honey in there, not too much. And then I'm going to use 1 teaspoon of instant yeast. So this is a very similar process if you wanted to think of as making beer as well. So I've got my 1 teaspoon in there. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to stir this up a little bit. This is going to activate that yeast. And what we're going to look for here in just probably a minute or two is a nice foamy top to it. So you really want to get that mixed in there, stirred in really well. And you can already smell it from here. It smells like bread. The yeast gives the bread the kind of flavor. It's very similar with beer. There's thousands of different strands of yeast. So anytime you use a different yeast, you'll get a different result in your bread, just like you will the beer. Let's put that to the side there. Now what I've got is 2 cups of einkorn. So I'm going to put my 2 cups of flour right into the mixer here. Do you have to have a mixer? Absolutely not. Our ancestors certainly didn't have a mixer, but you know, if you really want to work out, do this by hand. It can be done, but you're going to have basically Popeye arms after you do this. So at this point, what I'm going to be using is a dough hook, and that's just going to kind of mix things together. So at this point, you can already see that I'm getting a nice little foam top there. That's good. That yeast is activated. It doesn't take long with the instant yeast. So I'll go ahead and pour that in there. And then I'm going to add 1.5 tablespoons of salt. Now, I use pink Himalayan salt. You could use sea salt. Really doesn't matter. I tend to stay away from the iodized salt just because it's usually kind of low quality salt. So I've got those two right there. Now, at this point, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this dough hook. And I'm going to put this dough hook right in here like this. And I'm going to raise this up. And I'm going to go ahead and stir this in with the machine. So just takes a few minutes. Now, you may want to use one of these little spatula things to kind of scrape around the edges if you're using the machine. That'll help mix things up really nice for you. And like I said, you just really want to mix this together until you get it into a dough consistency. And that only takes just a few minutes here. It's not long at all. So I'm going to continue to scrape around the edges there until I get a nice consistent dough. While that kind of whips around a little bit, I'm going to go ahead and take a bowl here. And I'm going to put just a little bit of flour in the bottom of the bowl here. So take a little bit of the einkorn, kind of sprinkle it. This will help it from sticking to the bowl itself. So already I've got a nice little dough going here. So I'll show you guys what that looks like. I've got my dough hook here. You can already see that it's pretty much a nice little dough. So I'm just going to kind of roll it around in a little bit of the flour that I put in the bottom of this and kind of work it through a little bit more. Because what we're going to do is we're going to cover this with a cloth. I just use a clean, and I do stress clean, kitchen towel that I've got over here on the side. So just going to kind of work this together a little bit, kind of get the consistency. So once you've got a nice little ball going here, what you're going to do is you're going to let this rise. And if you've got a fireplace, don't put it exactly near it, but get it kind of close to it. It'll help it rise. Heat does tend to help it rise, but, you know, it doesn't have to be. You can just leave it laying on a table. That's what I'll do, just leave it on the table. So once I got my dough right here, I'm just going to kind of move the flour around a little bit in the bowl. Just going to kind of put it in here. And then what I'm going to do, like I said, I'm going to take a clean, which I already got prepared here, kitchen towel, and I'm going to cover this guy up. I'm going to wait 2 hours, and once that's rose, I'm going to cut it out into 3 sections, and I'm going to roll it out just like you would French bread. And at that point, I'm going to put it in the oven at 450, and it's going to bake for approximately 25 to 30 minutes, depending upon your oven. After that, I'll take a picture of it and show you guys, but this is a very easy recipe for making bread, and it tastes delicious. And I'll see you guys soon. Okay, guys, welcome back. So the dough is risen. And what I'm going to do on a nice little floured surface here, I'm going to take and I'm going to roll this out just a little bit so that I can make 3 even cuts, because that's what my pan has here. Now, if you want to do this in just a regular baking sheet, that's perfectly fine. Some people add a little bit of water to, you know, an oven-safe bowl and put it at the bottom of it so that it steams up a little bit. This little fancy contraption here actually kind of creates the steam inside the baking apparatus. So what I'm going to do with a very sharp knife, not a butter knife, not some dull knife, a very extremely sharp knife, one that I can actually shave with if I wanted to. Bring that off just a little bit. So I'm going to cut this into three sections and try to make them as even as possible. So I've got one, two, three little sections there. Now what I'm going to do is just kind of roll these a little bit in my hand and just kind of pull them just a little bit. If you notice, the dough is pretty elastic. So you just want to kind of keep rolling it with your hands a little bit. Keep kind of pulling it because I want it to be the same size as the tray, at least in my little tray here. If you're doing this in just a pan, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, kind of the longer the better. You don't want it thick and you want it as even as possible. So I'm going to keep rolling this guy a little bit, stretching him out here. So there we go. Kind of lay that one in there. Got this guy here. A little flour on those ends that I cut makes it a little easier to stretch out and roll. So I'll just keep kind of rolling this guy a little bit. Just like such here. So there we go. That guy in there, he's a little bit bigger, but that seems to always happen with the middle piece. Oops, a little dough in the floor. Dogs will enjoy that. We'll just keep kind of stretching this out a little bit there. Because once the bread is in this cooking sheet here, there's going to be a lot of steam created, and that's what you're going to do with the water in a bowl if you don't have one of these little ceramic cooking apparatuses. Now what I'm going to do with my very sharp knife is I'm going to cut little grooves into the top. Not too deep, just kind of little slices in there, just like such. There we go. And at this point, what I'm going to do, I'm going to cover this, and I'm going to stick it in the oven for about 25 minutes at 450 degrees. And after that's done, I'm going to put it on a rack here. You don't need a fancy bread rack or anything like that. You can simply use like a roasting rack, like you would roast a leg of lamb or a pork shoulder or something in, flip it upside down, and lay it across. And I'll take a quick picture of that and show you guys what it looks like once it's done. And I'll see you soon. So welcome back, guys. The bread is now done and I've got it cooling here. I'll let it cool for approximately 10 minutes and then we'll be able to cut it up and have it with our main dish tonight. And our main dish tonight is lamb shanks, one of my absolute favorite. So this goes great with broths. It goes good with any kind of soupy stews, that kind of thing. It also goes really good with pate and fondue. So stay tuned. We'll be doing some of those recipes, especially pate and fondue, one of my favorites. And I'll see you guys soon.
All right. Many thanks to the Folkish Farmer. What an awesome guy, man. That stuff looks wonderful. I'm going to definitely try that. I'm probably going to use it for a hoagie. You know, I'll probably put some soppressata and some salami on there. I think that'd be really, really good. But thanks again to the Folkish Farmer. What a nice guy. What a good guy over there at the Diet Circle and the Combat Circle of Neurona Society. So back to our guest here, Mr. Jack. You wanted to talk about how we need to rekindle the strength in all men, and we need to get young men back into the path of positive masculinity and away from degenerate garbage. I believe you said it was deranged masculinity, like pornography and whatnot.
Yeah, I think this notion of physical, like physical power and this kind of imposing yourself on the world in a non-sadistic way, I think that's innate in all young men and boys. I mean, for me personally, you know, I used to fight and play fight nonstop as a child. And even when I'd go on holiday to random countries, I'd just find like kids my own age to just wrestle. And that's something very natural and primordial, I'd say. And with certain issues, it can get so easily diverted and become something really disgusting. Mm-hmm. If you... you know, this idea of constantly needing to like be this figure of masculine energy, but then it can get diverted when you look at things like porn, which completely changes the path of where you're trying to push it onto.
So let's talk about that for a little bit, because I know that I've been talking against porn for many, many, many years. Even back when people were like, what's the problem with it? I was like, you know, I was really against it because the studies were out, the science about pornography and how damaging it is to a young man's psyche and the young man's hormones and everything about him has been out for years, and only recently has it started to come to light. Thankfully, you know, people are, politicians for once are doing some good stuff by coming at the porn industry and stuff like. If you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, why porn is so bad and why we absolutely need to just throw it in the trash.
Well, if you ignore the whole, you know, really disgusting activities that go on within the industry, which you shouldn't ignore, but on a personal level, I mean, it's a drug like anything else. It just attacks your dopamine and it makes you constantly reliant on that. It makes you, once you get used to things, you start to need worse and worse things. And it saps you of energy, it saps you of strength, it makes you less able to talk to women, less able to do basic tasks, less able to think, makes your mind very foggy and unclear, makes you more physically weak as well. I mean, there's studies about that, about the dip in testosterone, because it does cause a sharp dip in testosterone as soon as you finish watching porn. And then I think slowly it kind of gets back up to normal levels. But even that dip from a non-biological level, that's quite telling. If you do take part in an activity and then you come away from that and you just feel awful, you feel really low and down and you can't focus and you just feel, you don't even feel like a man anymore. And I think that's so telling of how bad it is for the individual.
Yeah. You know, a few years back, I was discussing the topic with acquaintances and friends of mine, young men. And, I had the idea. I didn't realize how bad it was. I didn't really understand why people were so against it. And from speaking to them about their own experience, I realized, I was very shocked to find that, a lot of these people were becoming addicted to porn. You know, they're sitting there watching it for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. And it just blew my mind.
And that's, it can get so like put into a normal routine of something you just do every day for an hour. And that's just so bad. That's just the worst thing possible.
And there's a lot of these guys, especially like Gen Z and stuff like, I mean, luckily I grew up before smartphones. Like I'm an older millennial. We didn't have smartphones. Like we were just getting computers and stuff like that. And if you wanted to see a naked lady, you had to snake a couple 80s nudie mags from your dad and go check them out with your buddies in the woods. I mean, it wasn't at your fingertips. Now kids, studies are coming out that kids as young as 8 are being introduced to like the hardest, most graphic type of pornography. And I'll tell you, I got rid of it a long time ago. And you know, one of my buddies or some old time buddies sent me a link of just like something gross that he thought was funny. It was pornography, and I opened it up, and I actually felt a little bit sick. I mean, I didn't know what the link was. I just clicked on it because I thought check this out. And I felt physically sick with how graphic it was. That's how far removed you get from it when you don't see it for a long, long time, and you see it again. It was really, really shocking how graphic it really is. And I was like looking at that when I was a young man. When I started getting my own computer and stuff in my early 20s, I was looking at it all the time. And now it's like I was poisoning my mind and my spirit with this filth.
Yeah, no, that's 100% accurate. I mean, it also, yeah, it. Oh, there's so many things that I could say about how bad it is. I mean, do you really think that it's natural for every single person in the world to have 3-second access to the most hardcore and sometimes illegal pornography in the world? That's something that shouldn't exist, in my opinion. And I mean, kids have access to that. If you give your kid an iPad, like he has access to that just as quick as he wants. I really don't think that's a healthy thing.
Yeah, I just recently saw a study that said the average age for a child's introduction to pornography was 11.
Yeah,
It's very grim.
That's sick. That's really, really sick. And, you know, as an 11-year-old boy, you're just starting to, you know, you're starting to, you know, play with yourself. Let's be honest. You know, we're grown-ups here. You know what's going on around that age. You know, you're starting to explore yourself, explore your body and stuff. Now, imagine instead of just, like, you just doing it innocently and stuff like that, you are inundated with just the most graphic, unnatural, you know, false. Like, I don't even watch movies anymore because it's just, not just because it's just full of degeneracy and stuff, because it's just, it's not reality. You know, you got these plastic, weird-looking people, these rubber-faced monsters in Hollywood, and they have, they're all just, like, perfect, and all of their imperfections are wiped out and stuff like that. Now, they'll take that a step further in the pornography that they put out there. It's just not normal. So you have this, like, really skewed, perverted, distorted, and, like, literally evil way of looking at natural human interaction.
Yeah, it takes something like which is naturally organic and it makes it completely plastic and just material and just vile. And if you look at a lot of people who use it, I mean, this is something no generation ever has had to deal with, which is why I think it's not so much a serious issue in society, is it's only just young people who now have access to technology from such a young age. They're the ones who are dealing with all of this stuff. So a lot of the older generations who would actually make decisions regarding these issues probably wouldn't take it as seriously because they never grew up with that kind of issue.
Yeah. So outside of porn, what are some other avenues that positive masculinity needs to be reinduced to our young brothers?
Yeah, well, apart from like physical training, I mean, all forms, I mean, fighting, for example, martial arts, I think is a great way to, I guess, somewhat substitute that masculine kind of power drive, which all young men have. And I don't think it completes it, though. That's the thing, is training in the gym, whether it's fighting or lifting weights, I don't think that 100% completes that innate drive for like conquering and imposing yourself on the world. But I think it is a great way to, in the modern age where you can't just join like a glorious war for something that's really has a true cause, you kind of have to kind of substitute little things like working out to appease that natural urge.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier about imposing yourself upon the world and not doing it sadistically. Quick little story. When I was a young man, I used to go hang out at the bar and stuff like that. And one of my buddies that used to come hang out with us, he was a really, really big, strong guy. He was a trainer and like stuff like really big guy. You know, I don't even know what he was bench pressing or stuff, but that's what he did for a living. So it's like, you know, he used to help train people for competition, all kinds of stuff. But one time we were out at the bar, and this guy, skinny college kid or whatever, he was really drunk and started getting really obnoxious and picked a fight with my friend here. And what my friend did was instead of, like, he could have just, like, ripped this kid's arms off and just, like, sent him to the hospital because he was also a boxer. You know, the guy was just, like, a really crazy guy. Instead of that, he just, like, grabbed him and bear hugged him and said, call a cab. And he just held him down and restrained him until a cab came, and then we took him out and we sent him home. And I was like, why didn't you just beat that guy up? He's like, nah, man. He's like, I know I could beat him up. Why would I do that? And I was like, that really at the time, a young man, I was like, I would have just started swinging on him. I would have just beat the crap out of him. But this guy realized he had this immense strength. So he showed compassion to this guy that was weaker than himself and just held him down. Is that something that you would implement? Understanding maybe having a balance of power and compassion so that you implement your will upon the world in a positive way?
Yeah, I mean, heroes don't like tyrannically impose themselves onto everything. You should impose yourself, but I mean, there are different levels of imposing yourself. You should save your anger for your enemies, that kind of thing. It's quite telling. If someone's really that aggressive that they want to fight you in a bar, I mean, that says more about them than it does about you. If you look at, for example, this is a bit off topic, but if you look at the Columbine shooters' diaries, you know, the stories they wrote in their diaries were about conquest. They wanted to take planes and drive and like do like in their minds great things. So ultimately, it was a story of conquest and like domination, but it was done in such a sadistic way because it was twisted with so many other mental health, alcohol, you know, all the issues that come with the modern age. But the foundational level was a story of conquest, and I think that could have been diverted on into something good if you'd taken away all the other issues that come with that.
So if these guys, maybe, you know, if Jack Young was talking to these guys, maybe they would be doing something good with their lives now and working out and raising families and building things instead of going and hurting a bunch of people.
Yeah, I'd hope so. I mean, it's just you can feel this kind of like natural rage and natural like force that you want to be the strong hero. But in all of their kind of writings, they don't have that they don't have that knowledge of how they would do that peacefully in the modern world without being kind of like a sadistic murderer. So I think there's definitely something there that could be changed.
And do you think that this kind of is also applies to the Sky King? I don't know if you remember him.
Who was that?
The Sky King was a guy, his name was Richard Russell, and he was a baggage handler at an airport. And he always wanted to be a pilot, but he couldn't be, you know, he just couldn't do it. I guess, I don't know if he failed the test or they didn't let him in or whatever. He just always, he loved planes. He always fantasized about being a pilot. He played like, you know, like simulators, like aircraft simulators or whatever. And one day he stole a plane and flew it. And like the Air Force had to show up and like follow him around, make sure he did. And he flew it. And he was doing barrel rolls and you know, all kinds of stuff, flying over the ocean or the bay or whatever was out there and over by the mountains. And he eventually, you know, crashed and burned and he died. But when that happened, it was really like a powerful thing. People were making Sky King T-shirts. People were saying, "Hail Sky King!" Everybody loved him, and it was like for that brief set. Even though this guy was just did something completely wild, he just like he stole a plane and got himself killed. So many of us were like, "Hail!" Because it was such a powerful moment. For 1 second, we looked up in the sky and were just enamored with the what you could say heroics of the Sky King. I believe it was heroics because he just literally just broke his chains and went and did something completely wild for one last time in his life. You know what I mean? Mm. Unfortunately, the guy passed away and he left behind a wife and stuff like that. But that was that to me, that was a very heroic story because the guy wanted to impose himself on the world and he couldn't. And so many of us empathize with that. We feel like we are in the modernist machine, the wolf age hamster wheel, and we can't do anything about it. We have this, we no longer strive for heroics. Would you say that's something that also applies in this situation?
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of like the same idea of if a dog gets beaten by its owner nonstop, and then eventually someday it bites the owner, it's like you cheer for the dog because it's finally stood up for itself, and it's kind of like it's been building up for so long. And that's the thing, is where you have this heroic drive and this heroic passion for strength and conquering and imposing yourself, but that needs to be in line with the channel of order, of positive, good order. And if you don't have that separate basis of order, which I do think fitness can give you, then the channel of chaos can join with it, I think, and that's when it can become diverted.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, there's a lot of debate about order and chaos and stuff like that, and there's always a stark difference between those that are like, no, we are entities of order. We are here to instill what is good in this world. And then there's those people like, well, I balance light with the dark, and they do this like amoralist kind of dance. And you look
want to be Jedi or something. Yeah,
there's something right. Weird. And
it's very relevant to note that in the Germanic faith, we are very much centered around the preservation and establishment of order. Our people are a people of laws. Wherever we went, we immediately established a king to hold laws, to establish a society and an order. And we didn't tolerate people who lived outside of the bounds of the law. Literally, they became outlaws and were able to kill them at will. In the modern idea of balancing chaos and order is, to put it frankly, it's some sort of satanic infiltration. It's not original to the Germanic people. It would be something that our ancestors would disdain and look down upon.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. And order is seen even on a very basic level with animals. You know, there is a, they follow the natural law. They still follow a natural law. There is still a structure and an order to it. They're not completely chaotic. You know, most animals will live the exact same as their fathers and their mothers, and they'll just do that forever. There is still a law and order there. So chaos is complete. It's not even like, it's not even something that an animal would do. It's completely just, it's just completely separate to any kind of biological or spiritual notion.
So speaking of the spiritual, we're kind of running out of time here, but how can this lifestyle, the lifestyle of positive masculinity, the lifestyle of fitness, the lifestyle of health and strength, how can the metaphysics of strength help us in our spiritual quest, our spiritual journey as well?
Well, like I say, it's that foundational level. Without it, I don't think you'll. I don't even think you'll truly be able to understand some of the stories and some of the myths of ancient traditions if you don't have any notion of your own physicality. I think that is such a basic thing which you need to achieve first to then achieve the mental and spiritual. And I just think they're so closely tied. I mean, when I wasn't in a very good place mentally, my physical training suffered from that. And of course, spirituality, my whole spiritual side was almost non-existent because the mental was so bad and therefore the physical was so bad. So you have to have all three in order, I think. And within the physical, yeah, there are spiritual laws. It's all tied together.
Yeah, very, very cool. Very cool. So, that's, you know, the primordial path, if you want to, or the path of spiritual enlightenment and stuff, you need to master all three things. You must instill order and mastery upon all of the aspects of your being. You know, it's not just study and learning the Eddas and learning your Galdr Lag and your poetics and, you know, all the stuff we talk about on the Bog and we as people that delve into theological stuff talk about. It's also like what Mr. Jack here is proposing with mastering your body and becoming strong and powerful and literally just becoming dangerous to your enemies. You know, I mean, I talk about this a lot, you know, being a warrior of the mind. Man, you got to be a warrior of the body, too. You must be a warrior. The Seti and also true man is dangerous in all aspects to his enemies. Everything from you know, and you could defend yourself and fight with potency, or you could just spark off a debate and just crush your enemies at any given point. The also true man, the man that follows the Germanic tradition, is a master of all forms, or he strives to be so, and he's constantly on that quest to master all of these forms. Now, Mr. Jack, I know you said, I'm sorry, did you have something to add to that?
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I completely agree with that, and I would say, considering we in the modern society don't have like a traditional caste-based system where we have like spiritual and the warrior, I think we have to try and attain all of those in one person. And then once a new age is achieved, then I think those set castes will appear themselves.
So would you say that if you are part of the Germanic tradition and you are walking this spiritual path, that you are you have a holy obligation to become strong?
Completely. And I mean, it is the vessel that carries your soul ultimately, right? In the physical life, it is something that, like I said, with the car analogy, you know, if the car breaks down, what's the point of having this brilliant professor and scholar inside of it? Mm-hmm. You need to keep it fit and healthy and strong. And I think then from the mental things that you learn from fitness, then I think you will be able to progress closer to the gods, I think, to that state of being. I think it just all adds up so clearly and smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I would actually slightly disagree with what Jack said there, not in the actual basis of what he was getting at, but in the car analogy he was making as a vessel that holds the soul. In the Germanic system, the soul or the body is part of the soul. It's one of the five parts of the soul.
The
Hamr is the shape of the body, and so as we improve the body, we are itself literally strengthening one of the souls, one of our own souls.
Yeah, I didn't mean it in the Christian sense of like you're just you without a physical form. Like that's, I didn't mean that's what the soul is, but I mean that shows you how connected it all is, how smoothly it all runs. That when you build your body, you build your soul, and therefore you build your mind as well. All three are so deeply connected.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, I would actually say that, Mr. Tristan, that further proves Mr. Jack's point.
Oh, absolutely, it does. Yeah. That's why I was saying I wasn't disagreeing with the actual basis of it. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, I just meant in the non-Christian.
I love this guy. He's a theologian at all times. I love it. So, Mr. Jack, you actually had a couple questions for us, or maybe a question.
Yeah, just a quick random one that's completely off topic is, sure. What are your thoughts on the unification of symbols? For example, in this faith, it's often, you know, most guys would wear a Thor's hammer to kind of create that group ideology, whereas I personally wear a different symbol just because it has so much personal meaning to me. Sure. But I can understand if a Thor's hammer would be more appropriate because it's like a Christian cross. It creates that group identity. Makes you trust each other, and it's kind of like a badge saying, you know who I am, this is what I believe, my values, etc.
Right. I think it's perfectly fine for people to wear different religious emblems that have something to do with the faith if it's more personally meaningful for them. Though for the people who do choose to wear a Thor's hammer as a sort of default symbol, we do have from historical and archaeological records that our ancestors did in fact wear this very frequently going as far back as we have records. And in fact, it's even a wider Indo-European tradition. When the Romans first came upon the Germanic tribes, they referred to them as wielding, wearing the club of Heracles is what they associated as, which is something that the Romans also did. So it does appear that the basic symbol of Thor's hammer was something that a lot of European people in some form or another, as appropriate to their religion, were quite fond of wearing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I wear a Mjolnir, but I have other ones as well. But as you described, I wear it because it is kind of like a unified symbol of our faith. However, it's completely fine to wear other symbols as well.
I'll just tie this quickly into strength. I mean, the Thor's hammer, you say, is like a foundational symbol of the religion that was universal to all Indo-European cultures, like somewhat. Doesn't that tie into physicality? I mean, Thor is, you know, so physically strong and kind of like this force of power that ties into the foundation.
Mjolnir as a symbol could be used as an emblem of Thor's power as the champion, the defender of Asgard and Midgard. It creates a sort of warding force to vanquish evil and chaos and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So to me, when I wear my Mjolnir, it's as Tristan described. I guess it symbolizes my badge. It says, I'm out here in the world to crush chaos and to establish order in the way that my ancestors did. And I know a lot of people are like, they don't want to go out and talk about, I don't want to proselytize. I don't want to look like I'm an evangelist or whatever. I don't want people to ask me about it. It's my own little secret. That's not me. That's not me. I wear it proudly. Anybody that asks me, I tell them, because this is the symbol of the striker. This is the symbol of the thunderer. This is the symbol of our people. This is the symbol of defense. As Tristan said, Thor was very much the god of the common man, because not only was he the defender of man and the defender of Midgard, he was also the thunderer. You know what I mean? He was the god of the common man, the farmer, which most of our ancestors were farmers, overwhelmingly. 95% of the population were probably farmers, and they prayed to him, not just for protection, but for rain, for their crops. So in my mind, it's a symbol of fertility. It's a symbol of cultural protection. You know what I mean? So it has a lot of meaning to it. It's not just, well, I wear this. This is who I am. Yeah, it's my purpose in this world, and it's showing everybody that's what I do.
Right. As we know, the hammer, Thor's hammer, was also used as a sort of instrument to hallow ritual spaces. So not only does it have a sort of symbolic meaning, but it also has a directly religious function as a sort of to make that which is pious.
Yeah. Mm. Exactly.
Perhaps I should have used the Thor's hammer, because I did use this for that purpose exactly. But I mean, also, what kind of god would look kindly upon someone who's afraid to show the world who he is and what he believes and his values.
Nice.
I don't think God would look kindly upon someone who's afraid.
No, I don't believe they would. I can understand the motivation to not want to proselytize, to evangelize people actively. But I would say if you're asked, what is your faith? What does this mean? I would say you even have an obligation and a duty to tell them.
Yeah, you don't have to have a massive debate with everyone you come across, but you can just say, this is who I am. I mean, if you know anything about history, this is what I believe, and there we go. That's, you know, that's who I am. It's my foundation.
Yeah.
Right, that goes with the sort of putting yourself out there in society, a sort of self-confidence that you are stable, you are strong, this is who you are.
Yeah,
exactly.
And there's a lot of stuff in the Eddas. Now, Tristan's probably going to correct me here, but I believe it's in the Rigsthula that Rig, who is Heimdall, comes down and, you know, essentially teaches the people about the castes, teaches man about the faith and all of this stuff. And I can't remember if it's the Rigsthula, but is it Rig that goes and finds Gullveig teaching about darkness and stuff like that and establishes a hall where he goes and you know, talks about how evil Sather magic and black magic is and talks about order and goodness?
Not in the Rigsthula, no.
Where am I mixing that up at?
I believe you're coming into that from the idea that Rig was Heimdall and that Heimdall does this in what is it? I believe it's the Anglo-Saxon myth in which he's associated with the flax man of some sort. I'm not entirely familiar with it myself, but Mark Perura from Norona would be able to answer that question very good.
Oh, yeah.
I personally prefer the position in which Rig is Odin.
Really? Maybe we should get old William Reeves on here to debate with you about that.
Yeah, we could absolutely do it.
Yeah. Oh, man. He is a big brain. I've been meaning to get him on for a long time. We're going to get him on. He's going to blow everybody's minds. He's absolutely brilliant. Which you guys should, speaking of William Reeves, everybody should get his book, Odin's Wife. Odin's Wife. Absolutely tremendous read. One of the best ones. One of the best books out there. So we are coming up on the end of our show here. Mr. Jack, where can people find you? And do you have anything to say in conclusion? Maybe some motivational words and tell everybody what you're all about and where they can find you.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram. It's a bit of an annoying name. It's _Jack_Young_. So if you can remember that. And yeah, just create that foundational basis of order. Fitness is the way to go, I think, for doing that. And remember, it's not the only thing. This isn't just like the fitness industry where fitness is everything. It's just the first step to achieving something much greater and attaining eventually that level of being, which I think all people should strive towards.
Wonderful. Mr. Tristan, do you have any conclusions there?
No, I think we hit everything fairly nicely. This was a good episode.
Wonderful episode. Excellent episode. Great part two. I think people coming off of our awesome interview with Brother Tom from Survive the Jive will really enjoy this one as well. Man, I really love the evolution of the Bog here, and I really love the evolution of this community and of Nerona society and you know, all of these things. And as you guys can see, we have so many awesome people joining up and joining on to the movement and coming aboard and helping teach and heal our people. Like Mr. Jack's talking about, he really wants to bring everybody to the level of strength. He wants everybody to be happy and healthy and powerful and impose this stuff upon the world and, you know, embrace the heroic ideal and all of these things. And it's not just Mr. Jack, man. We got, I mean, Folkish Farmer came on and talked to us about how we can improve our diets and get back to the eating the way that our ancestors ate and, you know, all these wonderful, help us economic advice. Then we had Dr. G on talking about, you know, the medicine and folk medicine and stuff like that. And, man, there's so many brilliant people, and it's not just theological stuff, which we really love. love to dig into in philosophy, but it is a multifaceted thing that we are doing here, and it is absolutely wonderful, and it's growing, and our people are going to continue to grow and heal. And I just, man, I'm so excited about the future that we have, and I'm so excited to meet all these wonderful people and these awesome people that have so much to offer, like Mr. Jack and Folkish Farmer and stuff. Man, the future is very, very bright. The golden age is upon us. The gods are coming back. Man, I can't wait. If I was an agent of the Wolf Age, I would be shaking in terror if I saw just the juggernaut that is brewing here. So many blessings to all you guys. Merry Yule, Merry Christmas to all you guys. Much love, many blessings. Like, subscribe, share. Click the alert button so you get alert every time we go live, which is every single Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern here on Dave Martell channel, here on The Bog with me and Tristan. We got so much more stuff coming your guys' way. I can't wait to show it to you guys. You guys absolutely love it. Make sure you go over to traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com and get some of this stuff, man. I'm telling you, beard oil, shampoo, conditioner, lotion. You know, I use facial toner now. I didn't even know what that stuff was. I'm using that now. It's great, man. It's great stuff. I use it. My mom uses it. My wife uses it. Dr. G uses it. Folkish Farmer uses it. We have so many people that are loving this stuff, man. So stop giving your money to the multinational globalist vampires that hate your guts and put out propaganda against you. They absolutely despise you. They sell you poison, plastics, synthetics, all this weird chemicals and stuff that trashes your hair, trashes your body, trashes your skin. Use something that grows from the earth that is completely organic. This is excellent stuff. Traditionalapothecary.bigcartel.com. Promo code Dave to get 10% off. You're going to love it. Well, anyway, that's going to be it for this evening. Many thanks and much love and many blessings to Mr. Jack Young. Make sure you go check him out on Instagram and on his YouTube. I'll have the links in the description, and we'll see you guys next week. Hail the gods. Hail the folk. I'll see you guys next time. Hail.